movie fans, this is a podcast sequel suck, and this is actually a sequel of another podcast we've already done. We're bringing back the original Ghostface. Lee Waddell, how are you, mate?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me back on. So this is the sequel to the sequel. So
yeah,
this is part two, which I find that's perfectly good humor for what you guys do.
Yep, we've all got our Scream. Our Scream 2 shirts on.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Love that. So we'll do Scream 2 tonight, and we'll talk about that one.
Oh, absolutely.
It had its brilliance and not so brilliant. But overall, I love that, actually. It's a sequel. That was pretty fun. That one, they pulled it off. And then it deteriorated from that point moving forward. 3, 4, 5. 5 was great only because they gave Wes some really good nods throughout that film. I didn't buy the ending whatsoever, and I don't hide behind that. So any of our viewers out there love the ending on 5, good on you. Love that. So I'm not in that camp. I'm going to apologize in advance. Webb's Craven is wrapping up the studio, so if you hear stuff clanging and banging, that's him. We just got done shooting content for the website and for the Instagram accounts. So people don't realize that William Perry, who is Webb's Craven, has a huge stunt resume, and he is, I affectionately call him the king of sequels, because I'd come in, do the heavy lifting, get the really good first one in the can, the product, and he'd come in back, clean up from that point on. So he's on Instagram, and I mean, his resume is like, Nightmare 3, 5, 6 and all this other silly stuff. So I call him the king of the sequels. So you got to have him on one of these days. You want to talk sequels?
Yeah.
He's
absolutely.
And it fits because his sequels do suck. And
Well, we did talk about Nightmare 2 a while ago, and at some point we'll look at some of the other Nightmare films. So now that we've got a contact, we'll definitely hit him up.
Oh, yeah. You guys have hours of sequel sucks with him.
Isn't Nightmare 3 meant to be one of the good ones? People seem to like Dream Warriors.
I don't know. I didn't work on it, so I didn't watch it. There you go. That's,
fair enough.
It's funny because actually I don't watch a lot of sequels, even films that I do. I don't necessarily.
Oh, I was just about to ask when you said that, I was actually thinking, are you someone that can do a movie and just have no interest in seeing the finished product?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a film that I've never seen, and especially if like they, I might do this movie and all of a sudden here we are 3 to 5 years later and they might have recut it or revamped it or renamed it's the main thing and for like an overseas release or even domestic release. And I have no idea what the thing's called and I've never seen it. And I can't remember what film I was in. And I saw it for the first time after like 20 something years. I'm like, hey, that was me. I remember that stud. I'm like, what? I'm trying to go through the guide to see what the film was and what it was called now. I'm like, yeah, I remember doing that stud. I got really tore up on that little silly thing. And, but I never saw the movie.
But it's funny, that's a bit like De Niro. De Niro and some other actors don't actually like watching themselves in film necessarily, and they won't normally watch their own film. So,
yeah, I mean, I could kind of relate to that in some senses, but I mean, like the running joke about stunt guys is, how many stuntmen does it take to do a high fall? One to do the fall and 20 to tell them how great it was. Yeah. So, I could see, when I watch my stunts per se, I'm pretty critical of them, because then it's that third point, that third person point of view, because I'm in the middle of it and it's not happening. It's, it's doing whatever it's supposed to be doing. And then, so it's neat to see it from the camera's point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I actually, many years ago, when I was trying to get into film, did a lot of short films at university. And sometimes I unfortunately had to be in front of the camera and then went through a phase where I was like, oh, well, I might try this acting thing a little bit. And me personally, I could sit in the editing suite and put stuff together, but I hated watching myself. And people would say, oh, that was fantastic. You were so believable in that scene or whatever. But I just didn't matter how much praise people would give me. I couldn't stand. I would cringe every time I'd watch it or just overanalyze. I wouldn't see it as perfect, so I couldn't watch it. So,
I understand. I mean, I still look at film today and I'm very technical on it. It takes a really good piece of film work to make me stop thinking about the camera angles and the cinematography and the lighting and, oh, great stunt. Oh, nice effect. Oh, he really hit that mark, or, all the multifacets of film. Right.
Yeah.
It takes a really good piece of film for me to relinquish that mindset and just enjoy a nice film for what it is.
Yeah. So I started doing film stuff at university, would have been not long after Scream 2. And it was a lot of fun, but you read all these books and you watch all these films and you have teachers tell you, like you said, all that sort of production stuff, the stuff behind the scenes, the camera angles, what this all means and all that sort of stuff. And you do get to a point where you go to watch a movie and it's very hard to switch that off. And for years, I really probably didn't really enjoy cinema as much because you are looking at all the technical stuff. You're not actually sitting back and almost switching your brain off enough to just enjoy the film as it is. And luckily over the probably the last maybe 10 years, I've started to get back to not overanalyzing the shot and why is this here and this and just like enjoy it for what it is. But yeah, when you're studying it or like you're being involved in it, I can totally see what you're trying to say is that it can be hard to switch that brain off when you know what's happening. Like you said, you know what the director's been telling you to do and where the camera is and all that sort of stuff. It's very hard to switch that off and just enjoy the film for the
end. It is, and I'm still not there yet. I find myself not being as technical, and then what will happen is I'll be just kind of enjoying the film for what it is, and then I'll see like this really cool shot or a really great angle or something that's just really, the cinematography was spot on, and because it'll catch me, not that I'm looking at it, I'm like, man, that was a great shot. Right, and it snaps me back into that mental mindset of looking at things technically again. So that's about as far as I've come since. that's the best it gets.
Yeah, well, it's funny because in the last podcast when you were on, you were talking about Bullet Time and The Matrix, and even that, like, it was really cool to see behind the scenes how they did it. But then there was a part of me going, yeah, but I like the illusion of not knowing and kind of in your brain going, that's an awesome shot, and it's the first time that I think they've ever done that, something like that in cinema. And then it's like, maybe you should have kept the illusion for a little bit longer and made people come back and watch it and kind of try and work out how you did it. Because like I think Angus had said, like they kind of released, oh, this is how we did it pretty early on. And it's kind of like, it kind of ruins the movie magic a little bit too sometimes. Like I think
it does.
Sometimes there's things that they probably could keep in-house for a little bit, like maybe release it on a DVD, the 20th anniversary DVD or the 10th anniversary.
Well, and we talked about it last time I was with you guys, and I've mentioned on some of the other podcasts or even when I'm doing conventions about that. The audience now is so well educated.
Yeah.
And Hollywood cut their own throat on that. You know, we educated them because we did all those behind the scenes, you know, cool stuff, which are really fun to watch. But we take away the movie magic. Mm. And right now, if you take a look at it, we, you know, people are producing great little short content on a cell phone, right?
Yeah,
and they're editing, we're all on laptops right now, and they're editing a laptop, and you know, they're producing great product in their home.
Yeah, don't worry, as soon as this finishes, Michelle's going to be breaking her wrist to put it together to put it on YouTube.
So. There you go, you know. And after you do, and like what you guys do in your podcast, you know, how many have you done now, Michelle? How many edits have you done?
Oh, probably only like 10, I think. Not too
right, many. Right. But if you look at the where you were when you did your first one, like learning it to where you are now at 10, look at the time that's elapsed. Right now, you're like, your first one took hours and days, and it was a train wreck, and you redid it. Now you're at number 10. Get it out of here.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So you've educated yourself. You know. So when you've done 100 of these things, you're going to do them in your sleep.
Oh, God, yeah. I won't be able to feel anything in this arm anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So Scream's a huge box office smash right across the world. It's inevitable that a sequel gets pushed. Obviously, Wes gets tapped on the shoulder at some point, even though I think they were looking at Rodriguez at one point as well. Kevin gets tapped on the shoulder to do the
movie. I like Rodriguez stuff. He's a great director.
So at what point, you being a star, and this is absolutely no disrespect, but because you technically aren't the face of Ghostface, and you're not seen on screen, I guess, unmasked, how important is it for them to bring you back? Or you are, like, I think you did mention yourself as expendable in the last podcast. Do they does Wes call you? Does management call you, go, Lee, we need you back as Ghostface? Or is it just like you kind of have to put your hand up and say, can I come back? Or,
you know, you'll get yes, I'd love to come back because I don't like the character Ghostface as it's portrayed now compared to when it was first hatched in the first two or three. Number one and two, it was good. Three had an element, and then after moving forward after that, it's gotten diluted down.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big fan of Ghostface. Now is a blundering idiot, right?
Yeah. I remember you said that last time too, and I totally agree with you, and I think Angus and Michelle did too. But the only, I guess, fan theory that I would add to that is that Billy, Stu, and Mickey were better killers and good at their craft, whereas the other people that have come along aren't great killers. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not experienced. They're not really that good at what they're doing. So that's maybe why.
Personally, I don't think it's that deep. I'm sure the directors, and if those, you know, if the directors are watching this, they could call me up and we'll talk. I don't care. You know, I just think they've taken the franchise and tongue-in-cheeked it so much.
Yeah.
Because from when Wes first did this, right, I should bring Webbs in here to comment on this, because he worked with Wes very closely during that time frame, right? Right after Scream was made, Bill did his website for a couple of years after that. So him and Wes would talk every day. And he talked about production and everything else.
But do you think, I feel like what you're sort of saying too, and then if there are fans of the original, say even the first two films that are kind of like, it's not so good anymore. I think it's sort of a victim of itself, because it was so meta, the first one, it kind of has to rely on that moving forward, and then it probably does for some people get a bit more ridiculous as each movie goes on.
I think you're right. I think it's gotten diluted down, and they just go down the rabbit hole with it. You know, who knows what's going to be number six might be like. I mean, the closest nods out of the franchise after Wes died, the closest nod to Wes was on number five. They did some really great Wes stuff, right? Mm-hmm. With the reveals and, you know, closing the door, opening the closet. All that was signature Wes. Bill just finished wrapping up all his stuff, so let's bring him in real quick. And that's a perfect intro on him, because he was working with Wes back at that time, right, as his web developer. So everybody, this is Webbs Craven on Instagram, and William R. Perry Stunt. And being that this is sequels suck, Bill has done all the sequels and like a multitude, and they suck. And so I call him the king of sequels is what I moniker him as, which is
perfect.
But Lee, you know what? It doesn't matter if they suck. If he gets paid, he gets paid.
Mm. Yeah, true that. He got paid well, and he still gets residuals from all that silliness. Yeah. So that's
and he met Elvira. So like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and actually had a little sort of recent reconnection through somebody else on the show. He said, "Oh, I want to send this picture you sent to me to Cassandra," and I was like, "Oh, you guys are still friends?"
Oh, wow.
I was like, "Oh, yeah." So even all this time later, still good friends. And yeah, what Lee was talking about, when I was working with Wes about the time that Scream was supposed to come out, and he showed me like the first part of the script, and I said, "You'll never get it made. No one will produce this. This is so scary. This is so this is hard to watch. I can't even read it." And he's like, "No, it's going to be funny." I'm like, "This isn't funny. This is the most scary, gnarly, effed up stuff I ever saw in my life." And he's like, no, it's going to be great. And at that time, he was really tired. He'd written a lot of the sequels to the Nightmare on Elm Streets, but he wasn't really involved with them. He was the executive producing, which is kind of the send me a check kind of thing. And when Scream came along, it was like, you know what? It's just one more excuse, a new location, and a new way to carve up some teenager, you know? And it was just formulaic and boring. And as, you know, I was overhearing that, you know, Lee doesn't necessarily watch his sequels. I did three of the Nightmare on Elm Streets, and I've seen them, but I look at them and it's like, I couldn't tell you which one was which after a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I know who I doubled, but they look like me. So, I mean, but when Scream came out, it was like, okay, we are going to turn this on its ear. We are going to change the way people look at these movies. This is going to blow their minds. And interestingly, but Wes went on Good Morning America, which is big show, you know, nationwide thing. And I had just finished the website, and he didn't tell me he was going to go on Good Morning America. And the site was okay. He was getting about, I don't know, 10,000 hits a month, which at the time was pretty good. And then he went on TV and said, "Yeah, you should go to my site. We talk all about my new movie." That's all he said. Nobody knew the name. He didn't say westcraven.com. And we were getting 100,000 hits an hour.
crazy.
All of a sudden, and people went nuts because they, you know, they'd seen the movie and they just wanted to, you know, oh my gosh, I got to tell you what I think about this movie, because it just blew their minds. And Wes was very energized by that. Finally, something new. Finally, something that just, yeah, just took you away from all the things that you knew were going to happen, who it could be, how it could happen. And the funny thing was, too, he said, yeah, it's after the first one, I think his mind was blown. He had no idea it was going to be so big. Mm. And he didn't even, I had a mask that I went and bought at the store so I could do some graphics. It had been sold back by the production company to the place where he bought the first mask. So I had a film used Scream mask that, I mean, those things are worth $10,000 now.
Yeah.
And I sold it like an idiot for like $300.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I thought, $300? You're an idiot. Yeah. But yeah, and then he said, no, this is going to be it. After the first one, you know, we're going to, they did the sequel because it was just too hard not to. Business is the way it is. And then when they did two, he's like, okay, three, it's over. I swear on my life. He said, I have an interview with him recording on my, you know, my children's lives. Never more than three. It's not meant to be. Nobody wants to see it anymore. Yeah. And so, yeah. And on it went. And they're doing what, 12 now or 19 or whatever. And the thing is, it's gotten back to being formulaic again. I mean, yeah. I just have to believe Wes is rolling in his grave. But come on, man. Yeah. I mean, I know we did four, you know. Mm. But I think he thought he could come back in and goose it a little bit and get the formula broken down again. But, you know, it's tough to do. Then they made the scary movie, see, you know, things, which made even more fun of all this stuff. So how far can you go in any, you know, that pendulum can only swing so far before it's ridiculousness.
You're right. You touched on, you know, whether you like Scream 3 or not, and I have my issues with it, but I still, as a trilogy, I still love that movie, and I love that the arc for Sydney and all that sort of stuff. Like you said, Wes had the perfect ending, which normally, especially in the horror genre with franchises that they keep continuing on, it had this nice closure. It didn't need to be reopened. We didn't need to come back, but obviously money talks. I mean, the Weinsteins at the time wanted a fourth movie because they sold off some of their stuff to Disney, and they were trying to reinvent themselves, and so they went back to some familiar IP, and Wes probably thought, oh, well, a bit of superannuation money, or I don't know, like,
Hollywood does that, though. Think about it. If you look at, not as the in the sequel arm of things, but Hollywood always goes back to a known bet, right? They went back to, you know, how many stars are born since the original? Number four now.
The silent ones.
And fortunately, those have all been really good remakes. They tried to remake Point Break years ago with Keanu Reeves. Yeah, right. That one. Yeah.
Four people saw that movie.
And
I wasn't one of them.
And,
were you doing that?
No.
Oh, God, no. It's one of my, the first one is one of my wife's favorite movies. And every time it comes on, I'm like, please don't. Come on. She's like, oh, come on.
And then right now, the chatter around town is they're trying to do, what are they going to try to reboot? Roadhouse. Another
Oh, God. Yeah.
Roadhouse, classic genre, practical piece of film.
Oh,
it was
great. It's definitely got a cult.
Love it.
The crazy thing is, Roadhouse has got a cult following, and the people that like it really love it and will swear by it. But if you actually surveyed how many people that watch cinema, it's not rated that highly enough to even have a remake or a reboot. So it's kind of crazy that sometimes they would even do that. It's like,
yeah, exactly. So they're gonna try to do that again. I'm like, nah. But now, to Hollywood's credit, the Coen brothers came along and redid True Grit, right?
Remember? Yeah, and that was actually really good.
Yeah, and that was ballsy. You do not mess around with John Wayne and that character and go down that rabbit hole. And they pulled it off. And I like the Coen brothers. They make some great films. They're hilarious.
Well, you know, talking back about the sequel thing, I asked Wes at one point, so when's Freddy gonna die? So when he stops making money. And, I did Freddy number six, which was called Freddy's Dead. The final nightmare. And Wes made another one 2 years later and tried to sort of reboot it. And, you know, he wanted to try to not so much rehash it, but it's like, you know, what if we again, deconstructed that. Mm. And he said that when they did that one, this was just pre-Scream. Yeah. It was, I got to break this open again. This is like a, it's just too much of a, you know, it's become a sacred cow that everybody does everything the same way. I got to do this. So he did that one, was in it, and did all that. And then Scream came along and he's like, that's what I should have done. Yeah. That's what I should have done. If I had done that, and any, you know, Kevin Williamson is genius in the way he wrote it and the way, and Wes shot it just the way it was written. I mean, it was great. But I think that was kind of his thing was, all right, finally somebody figured a way to really mess with this. And the thing is, the thing that you couldn't do in the script that you had to do with casting was the Drew Barrymore thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
she's in the freaking poster. You're not going to kill her in the first 5 minutes. She was the only real star. I mean, you know, the real known entity name in there. So yeah, when the casting and the way he just took you by the throat and threw you across the room.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that was just, that was probably his most brilliant comeback, you know, into horror, which at that time he was actually trying to bail out of anyway. He really didn't want to do horror anymore. I was with him when he was doing Music of the Heart.
Yeah.
It was a Meryl Streep movie. Mm-hmm. Gosh, Madonna ducked out. Oh, that must have really been a crushing thing to get, have to settle with Meryl Streep because you didn't get Madonna. But
I kind of think he dodged the bullet with that too.
Yeah, and he wrote a book at the same time, which he was trying to push, which was also going to get made into a movie, and it was more sci-fi than horror. And so when he had me do his website, he said, I want the site to be cool and I want it to be spooky, but please don't make the walls drip with blood. That's not really my thing anymore. Mm. I was like, oh, anymore. Interesting. So, should I leave now?
Yeah, you're taking over my podcast.
Well, I was just trying to class the act up a little. Yeah. You
know, right now, I mean, look who I'm talking to. So,
hey.
Well, before Bill dies out of here, because he's going to go get the, we're going to go do some tacos here in a little bit. While we got him here for a minute, what do you have to throw at him on his multitude of, I don't know if he had time to pull up his resumes or not after you.
Oh, no, we're going to get him back for his own episode.
Put him on, man. Let me know, because I'll be the fourth cameo. I'll be the third reel on that one. And I'll go through his, and I know his resume, so we'll get together before and get all the questions lined up.
I heard you guys talking about, have you seen all of your films? There's some of them that are so bad, I can't do it. Mm. And it wasn't even, the first one, the movie Newsies. Oh my God, so bad. It was the funnest experience ever, but I get into like the first 5 minutes and all my good stuff's right there. Like, my daughter loves it. They turned it into a Broadway show and all this stuff. I'm like, this is unwatchably bad. And it's Christian Bale. Oh, you know, Christian Bale's great. And there were some other great actors in it. But God, that movie just stinks up the room. I tried so many times to get through it. I think there's actually even a couple of stunts that I did I've never seen because I can't. I can't sit and watch that turd. It's just like, it's like video vomit. It's just terrible.
Well, you didn't hear that note. I feel like Home Alone 2, I reckon, is better than the first one. Controversial opinion.
Which one?
Home Alone 2 is better than Home Alone.
Now, I am in Home Alone 2, and thank you. It was better. Mm. We'll talk about that another time.
Yes, we will. Before you go, though, you know, you're talking about Wes kind of getting stuck in the horror genre. And I think, because I read one of his books, I've got a book. It's not written by him. I think it's ghostwritten anyway, but it's about, I guess, Wes's film life pretty much up till I think Scream 3 or maybe just a fraction after. And yeah, I've always felt bad because as a Wes Craven fan, he made some great horror stuff, but I did feel for him because he was kind of did feel like he was pigeonholed into, because he was so good at doing that, people just never really, I'm assuming studios just never rated him as doing anything else but that. So it was kind of like, maybe just to pay the bills and just to stay in Hollywood, it was kind of like, well, I'm just going to have to do this script because, and I think it felt like Scream felt like that too. Like he hit that out of the park, and that's a movie that is much loved and will be still talked about in another 25 years with great fondness. But it's crazy to think that it was kind of like, oh, I don't want to do another horror movie.
It's funny you say that.
A lot of got a book payment, you know. Yeah. That's what we joke about. Anytime you see somebody do a piece of crap, you go, hey, man, everybody's got a book payment to make. You know?
In the thing is, like, a lot of people don't realize the behind the scenes deals that are made, you know, like, oh yeah, I got a 3-picture deal, so I got to do this one and this one, so I get to do what I want on number 3.
And that
happens less often.
Predator 2, Danny Glover did Predator 2. He had no interest in doing that movie.
Yeah.
He had a kind of art project kind of film, more of like your Fox Searchlight kind of film than your 20th Century Fox. And he had to do Predator 2 in order to get it done. And he was clear about it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the movie was fun. I was overlooked by the Academy, but Danny was fine in it, and he did a couple of things. It was one of the, I mean, everybody does it. Wes did the Scream 2 and 3 so he could do Music of the Heart.
I remember there was definitely a chapter in the book that really went into that he made sure that if he was going to get, you know, the Weinsteins wanted him back for any further Scream, he's like, well, I'll do this for you, but I want to do my own movie. And
that happens all the time, but I'm
really glad for him that he was able to do something he really wanted to do. But having said that, I feel like that's a movie that didn't do so well at the box office, no matter how well it was, because I think people just don't associate Wes Craven with the serious, either music/love story or whatever, you know, serious drama. They're like, oh, hang on, when is the killing starting?
It's like, well, you know, it's funny because I looked something up the other day. I was kind of looking back at I was kind of redoing my filmography, and I realized the very first thing I ever did was for Wes Craven, but I didn't know it.
Oh,
it was a Disney TV show when Disney's Magical World was on local TV here. And it was called Case Busters, and it was a stupid little mystery that they, you know, TV movie for an hour on Thursday night. And it was done by Wes. I didn't know because I was in the second unit doing our stunt. And if you look, I mean, if you IMDb him, and if you really dig in, he did crap loads of all sorts of television and stuff that you never would have known he did because, you know, people wanted to see nightmares, you know, and so they saw that. But he was very gifted at that. But I could always tell that he always had a bit of a trying to prove himself.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to do Music of the Heart because he was an educator from way back. And that story just was amazing to him. And I think he just wanted to show people, no, I know how to shoot a real film.
Yeah.
You know, don't just look at all this, you know, blood, you know, somebody walks through with a 2-gallon thing of, you know, blood. And you're like, oh, Oscar's coming. He's just out and he needs to take a shower. You just knew you weren't going to get any awards. You weren't going to get any respect from the community because you make horror films, you know. But people broke out of that, you know, James Cameron and other guys did it. So I think Wes just said, yeah, I'm going to do it too. Yeah. And so he really, by the time I was wrapping up on his website, he was done with horror films. He wanted nothing more to do with it.
I don't know. I think Lee might have mentioned in the last episode, but what actually blows my mind, see, again, being an Aussie, and I actually haven't been to Hollywood yet, and it's still on that bucket list of getting over there, but the Hollywood Walk of Fame and the stars, I'm always confused by that because I feel like you hear so many people that it feels like everyone's got a star.
That's it. Here's the bottom line. If you want a star, it just costs money. Mm. You can buy your own star.
Yeah.
When you've got a new movie coming out, kiss the butt of everybody in the Hollywood Walk of Fame Association. You have to have a movie that's coming out because you're going to use it to promote it.
Yeah.
And you get your production company to throw a couple of mil behind it. Because you go down there, when you get there, you're going to go, who the F are all these people? Yeah. I've never heard of any of these people. And it's not just because they're old.
Yeah.
It's because somebody, you know, Connie is going to get a star.
It's funny you say him because I feel like, I'm sure she doesn't have one, but I kind of feel like Paris Hilton probably got one before Wes. And you go, what? Like,
hang on. I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
But you hear what I'm saying. It's like, it blows my mind that you sort of see, like you said, and I guess it does tie in normally when there's a movie coming out, you see them do the hands, you see, you know, in front of men's Chinese theater and all that sort of stuff. And then you go, hang on, they're up and coming. They've done a couple of good films, but they're relatively a nobody when you compare them to people like Wes. And then you find out Wes. And then I think, I'm pretty sure Michael J. Fox only just got one. And you go, where's the world back to front? Like, that makes zero sense to me.
It's also the big deal, I think, is it's a sentimental thing. Yeah. Like Michael J. Fox did some great movies, no two ways about it, big star and all that. But they gave it to him when his health really took a beating. And so there's certain times where it's like, oh, come on, how come this guy doesn't have a star? And then people will start petitioning and they'll get enough out of it. And then all they need is some event or something. If Michael J. Fox might have been raising money at that time when they finally got it done, it's like, yeah, let's do this. Let's use it as a thing. So we'll be on every news channel in America and, you know, around the world.
And good on him for that, right?
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of great work post-movie career. He's done his best work as a human being, in my opinion, after his film career. You know, the stuff he's done with his foundations are just incredible. So
I'm going to go out and wash Lee's car. That's the kind of things he has me do.
Yeah.
I'm such a slave to this man. You know,
all that, and he gets to do the website.
Did you hear that way?
Yeah. It's a privilege, yeah.
Anyways, that was a... Sorry, we hijacked our podcast here. It was great. And today's been a great production. And, you know, we got you guys and we came up and I'll break it on your website first. We just got done putting together the Scream 2 wardrobe.
So we have
Scream 2 robe. And then I paired that with a lot of controversy around this. I took my mask that I got from Scream 2 production, not the Gen 2 Scream worn one, Scream worn. So the... Here, let's jump into the sequel sec.
Yeah.
So when Tony Caesar brought me back in to the middle of the movie to do the heavy lifting, sarcasm implied, when we did all the car stuff and all that sequence. And
that's such a good scene too.
And yeah, I watched that not too long ago. And man, this like, Nev Campbell just nailed that scene when she's crawling out of the car when I'm supposed to.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I watched that the other day and I'm like, God, she was just, her and Wes were so synced up that night.
Yeah.
Right. And they were just nailing it, and Wes was coming in and doing coverage, and we did, you know, she hit it 100%, and Wes would sit there and just come in and do two or three different shots of the same stuff, and she just nailed it every time.
I think Wes has always been on record, if you listen to some of the commentaries from the film, that the fact that Nev was a dancer and just had that sort of, I guess, the body movement to be able to also do a lot of just everything she had to do in the Scream movies was such a benefit, just her balance and her poise and being able to do it. And like you said, sliding out of the car and getting across you and stuff is like, you know, maybe another actor would have been a little bit more clumsy, but she's sort of almost cat-like being able to get out, which was a huge benefit for the movie as well and for her character.
Yeah. So digressing back, when we went to shoot that sequence, we actually crashed the car. You know, I had a crash helmet on. We had done everything right, so I wouldn't get hurt. And we went to put the Scream mask over the helmet, right? And I went to wardrobe to get a Scream mask to cut up to put on my helmet.
Yep.
And they were like, no, we're not giving you one of these. I'm like, well, we got to do something in case for whatever reason the camera catches just that little bit. And so they had a box of these other masks, and that's the one that I have. And there's this huge controversy around this mask. They're like, well, that mask wasn't in production until after the film came out and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, but this is what they had a box full of, and that's where I got it. So I don't really care what you people are saying. This is where it came from.
Yeah.
And now it's coming out through some of the real hardcore collectors that these masks that I used, right, were used in the whole stab theater scene. And I'm like, well, if they used it in that scene, it was the same movie, and we shot it in the same time, same week, actually. What's that mean about my mask? You know, so there's still controversy, and it's kind of like, I think it's going to get rewritten to where that mask that I have, which is a poly shrouded
different
version, is politically correct to say, yes, it was in existence prior to the release of the film.
I know you touched on it in the last episode, and that's the crazy, stupid rabbit hole I went down many years ago, was trying to sort of get all the slight variations of the mask. It's like, oh my God, just make the one mask from the original mold and just keep making that same mask. But they slightly tweak it enough and restamp it. And then that's the thing, like you said, like, I think you touched on it in the last.
Look at the silliness behind me, right?
Yeah. they're fair variations on it. Like I'm talking about that. The one you're pointing at, like the original should just be almost the original. And it's funny because unfortunately, I couldn't jump in and chime in, and I was almost like yelling when I was listening to the podcast last time. It's like, oh, I know the answer. The other The other mask that gets a lot of love and they turn up on eBay and go for a lot of money is what they call the RDS version, which is the Randy Death Scene mask. And that's the variation that everyone seems to go for. And that's the one that's like almost the Holy Grail. If you can't actually have the original Scream worn, if you can get a Randy Death Scene, because there's something about the variation, you can spot it, and people have all the screenshots and screen caps in the movie. I'm like, I love Scream, and I unfortunately probably spent too much money on different masks over the years, but it's kind of crazy. It's like a bit mental, but yeah, that's fan base. I get it.
Yeah, so that Randy Death Scene, that wasn't even my, you know. So I love Scream. I love the genre. I love the horror fan base, and here's what I really appreciate. Yeah, I gave life to the original Ghostface character through Scream 1 and 2.
You killed Drew. Right?
Yeah, and I killed Drew. And so I'm very proud and humble and honored to be a part of that whole thing. That really, here's what I like, is I love the interaction with the fans. And you guys know it, I'm very active on Instagram, right? Because it keeps me in touch with that fan base. And I learn a great deal. And the hardcore mask Scream collectors, and there's a couple of them that are just world class. I mean, there's like Drown Boy Productions, right? Mm. Drown Boy Douglas. Hardcore crazy collector. I mean, he knows it all. He's actually my go-to source. And he was one of the first guys to chime in about the whole poly-shrouded mask and Scream 2. I'm like, dude, I don't really care. You know, I don't care. People are like, well, I'm like, okay. That's like people telling me, I always like the experts that never interviewed me about Scream 1 when it's my character involved in that opening scene with Drew. I'm like, I hadn't talked to anybody. What do they know? Like,
yeah, 100%.
You know, I was there that night with Wes and Drew and Tony Caesar. So I'm like, nobody talked to me. So, and not like I have some, you know, super knowledge of what's going on, but don't tell me something that I did physically and was there to see.
Yeah. When you were there.
Yeah, like I picked up two masks out of the box in wardrobe, and we cut one up and we literally black gaffed it to this white helmet. I sat there for about an hour prepping this helmet, getting it set up. I wish I still had it, because it'd been really great. It'd been a great prop to have at this point. And I might recreate it at this point too, if I could find the same period piece of helmet that we had back there in the 90s. Because they wouldn't let us use the cloth shroud ones.
Yeah.
You know, that was the deal, is that we couldn't use those because they're like, they didn't have all that many and they weren't about to let me cut the shroud off one to make it fit with this helmet, right? And, you know, and so that's all this whole dilemma, quandary happened about this poly shroud thing. I'm like, that's where it came from, guys. I don't care. And all of a sudden now it's popping up like, well, yeah, they used them. And there's quite a few of them that are associated with the stab movie theater sequence.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that would mean they're around, wouldn't it?
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't go, I don't get too crazy about that stuff because it's really not in my wheelhouse. I'm very ignorant of how many mask variations there are.
Oh, there's way too many.
Here's my... Yeah, right. Here's my K&B. Yeah, so here's my K&B. And I got this one for who's Clive over there in the UK?
Yeah, Burke Bench.
Yeah, Burke Bench, right? So Clive is the dude. I really like working with him. And he makes
Clive is really good. Stuff. I've actually got that one from Clive. So I've got one that's got the black sort of shroud. And then I've actually got one that's the gray that you kind of is more, looks more like what you were wearing on the night when you stabbed Drew.
That's a really neat one because everybody keeps telling me how much glitter there are in these things. And I'm like, you know, I don't remember the original wardrobe having the amount of glitter that they do now, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm, just because I'm actually becoming more of a collector fan as this craziness, you know, develops, is how do we, I want to be able to take the new material that everybody's making these beautiful, you know, robes out of and kind of dull it down, kind of get rid of the glitter. The original ones were not that glittery. Can't replicate that. So I'm like, okay, well, how do we get rid of the glitter? So I'm thinking about how we age some of this textile to get it, to back it up a little bit, to even get more authentic.
Well, I was going to say, I think there's probably another podcast in there just on costumes and design, because so I have the original, I guess, Fun World version of the Scream or Father Death or whatever you want to call it. It looks good just for a quick Halloween type thing, going to a party. If it gets damaged, no big deal. but it's definitely not accurate to what the movie is, obviously, because Funworld own the Ghost Race mask, but they obviously don't own the design that Scream used for the actual costume. So it wasn't until the 25th anniversary, and you've got one of the masks behind you there with the glittery shroud on it. Yeah. They finally got permission, or they must have done a deal where they actually did a fairly close movie replica with the gloves, with the glitter, or with the, you know, the sparkle in it. And it's really, really good. But that's, it was a bit more of a premium costume, maybe $100, maybe not even that much. But then, like you said, Clive, and there's a couple other people that do the proper ones, and you just say, what do you want? Do you want a Scream 1? Do you want a Scream 2 with the Velcro at the front? Do you want a Scream 3? And they make them. And Clive made me, I wanted a Scream 2. I wanted the Velcro at the front. And I've got
one. Do you have your arm slits? Do you give your arm slits on it?
You know the crazy thing? I only got it recently, and I've just been so busy with renovations at home that I haven't
still pulled in the packet.
I pretty much haven't pulled it out of the bag, haven't even put it on. But
I understand.
Thing you said, what I do love about it, there's a slight glitter, but not too much. And I reckon that's probably closer to, like you said, what you wore back in the day. And I know Clive absolutely goes for as close to accuracy, well, as accurate as possible. So I believe he's probably got the right material where it's there's a little glimmer, but not too much.
Yeah, I use Clive's stuff a lot. Mm. You know, he makes the best reproduction of the Canby that there is out there, short of a Gen 1, right? Mm. Canby. I like him. He's good on his knives.
Yeah,
like, I've got this one. This is his knife, right?
Yeah, I've got one of those too.
And what I like about his knives, so I use these at our conventions, right? Mm. I also have a real Buck 120 that one of my prop guys made into a doll for me, but it's a real knife.
Yeah.
But I like Clive's. This one actually has the best look and feel for being a prop plastic knife. I mean, he's spot on, and his weight, the weight that he does is just incredible. So he's probably one of my best go-to guys.
This is good promotion for Clive, isn't it?
It is. I wish he was in here on.
Yeah.
Here's one for you then. Put this one together. Let's go out and get some of the hardcore collectors and builders like Clive and like Douglas over there, Drown Boy, and you know, some of the heavy hitters that I really respect, because their knowledge base and their collection is just humongous. You know, maybe Nathan and these guys that are really know the stuff. And instead of just two or three, let's just put together, like, you know, get everybody on there. We'll do one big, like, 12-member mediate it. And I'm supposed to sit down with those guys, and like Douglas, and I'm like, next time he and I cross each other's paths at a convention or something, I want to sit down with him, especially if we're promoting the Scream 2 wardrobe at that point. I want to sit down with my poly shroud. I'm like, this is what I got off the truck in the box. What do I have? Mm-hmm. You know, and he'll know it.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to at least clarify or rewrite and put it to bed, you know, about what happened with that shroud, that poly shroud mask at that particular time. Because, you know, Funworld doesn't, at that time, they do now. Funworld didn't keep a whole lot of super accurate records as what was in production,
which is a big shame, really. Like, I mean, you sort of think.
But back then, you know, here we are. We were only two in on the franchise, and it was still kind of, you know, it's like, I could see them not necessarily wanting to do that from the big corporate side of life. There was another case, I can't quite remember. Was it in Scream 4 when they had some masks that were pre-production and they used them all over the place? And I think it was Scream 4. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I think Scream 4 used a particular mask, and you can tell the difference in the reshoot. So Wes had to go back and do some reshoots at the insistence of the Weinsteins, and there's definitely a variation in that mask. And a lot of fans hate that mask as well. So it's like,
let's put it this way. I didn't even see that sequel. I just know that there was a pre-production mask that they were using that wasn't really in the catalog at that time.
Yeah, so okay.
I'm hoping that's what happened way back in the day with this poly shroud thing, because there's plenty of stab poly shroud robes that were actually film used that have these poly shrouds.
Without being someone that's, you know, worked in Hollywood or anything like that, but has worked in sort of other production type things, it is quite believable that legitimately that Wes or production said, we need a box of masks, we've got this scene. And so Funworld have really, like, just quickly, wherever they've manufacturer and gone, Wes needs 200 masks or a box of masks. And right. they made it wherever they make in China, they're rushed out straight to product set. And like you said, they haven't been seen by them or signed off. They just give them straight to production and you've opened that box. So they're probably not properly cataloged or anything like that. That's
good. Really they didn't have tags. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like I was taking the Fun World tag off of something, you know.
Yeah.
There's a exactly. box of masks.
Well, see that and... to me that says that they're like literally being made and shipped straight out, rushed to production. Because you'd think they would be at least half manufactured, like you said, have the tags on them and stuff like that, if they were probably done to the fullest. And if they're not, well, they're like, oh, well, they need masks. Wes needs masks by Wednesday. Let's get them out, rush them out.
And that could very well be the reality of it. And we'll see, when myself and Douglas and maybe some of the other real super knowledgeable guys get together and talk about it, maybe we could put this story together and then rewrite or clarify history of the Scream franchise and the Scream mask. You know, being part of the Scream Nation, as I affectionately call that, I think it's really good to really get it dialed into the lineages and all that stuff. Because especially the hardcore collectors, man, those guys are like, yeah, I got the first quarter, I got the January through March version, the March through June version. And like one of the guys sent me that chrome one, he had two or three in stock. And one of the Instagram guys sent me up that, Jordan sent me that, and he had the month of that tag. That's how great those collectors are. They said, like, here's the month and year. I'm like, that's cool. I just like the mask. All right. And so it's fun to be a part of that. And I'll never get as crazy as those guys, and I don't have the funds to spend the millions practically that some of them have. Tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars into some of this stuff.
I've got a lot of Clive stuff. I got a while ago, and mind you, the English pound is still quite expensive when it converts to Australian dollars. I know you think the mother country would look after us, but but I got the KMB, and he said, "Do you want it with the black shroud or do you want the gray?" And at first I'm like, "What gray? What are you talking about?" And then I realized, oh yeah, when you go back and watch you chase Drew, you can see around your neck, it's not fully black. It's more of almost a gray. So he's actually made two versions. I'm like, give me the black now. Maybe I'll get the gray later. And then it got to that point.
So
collectability, I'm kind of like, I need the gray.
The original ones were like made out of t-shirt material and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They reworked them. They were production modified original masks. Mm. And I was doing a signing earlier this year. And this kid brought one in that his mom gave him as a Halloween present.
Mm.
And I looked at it and Webbs was there and he looked at it. And I'm like, this looks like a production mask. It was a Gen 1. His mom got it from like one of the Scream stores or,
Spirit Halloween.
And he got it right after, he got it in like 96, right after one was finished up. And a lot of that stuff went back out actually into the system. So I think he just was one of those lucky dudes that ended up with the original Gen 1 film mask.
Yeah.
And here's the kicker. He had me sign it.
Oh.
I said, if you got this authenticated, it's worth a lot of money. You really want me to sign this? And I tried not to sign it. And now he insisted. I'm like, okay. I said, it's either going to make it more valuable, and that's not braggartly, I said, or you're wrecking $20,000. I'm like, your choice, man. But if you want it signed, I'll sign it.
Yeah.
And he had me sign it. It was hilarious. And, it was funny. I was actually nervous signing that piece.
Oh, yeah. I would be too.
And I'm like, holy moly, man. I screwed this one up. That'd be terrible. What's the guy that has the Scream 2 robe over in the UK?
He was just would it be Tim Wagstaff?
Does Tim have one? Let's talk to Tim.
I don't know. I've lost track of who actually has it. I know you mentioned it in the last podcast. And I probably should know, being a big fan of Scream 2, but I don't know. Or I'm sure if you mention the name, I'm like, I know who you're talking about.
I can't remember right off the top. Real cool guy. He was doing one of the conventions over there. I was trying to jump on it and get over there in time for that convention just so I could do, because I think Roger was over there, right? The voice of me. Well, I'd love to go over there to the UK and do some of their conventions and shows. Like For the Love of Horror was a great hit.
right? I just finished that one up.
We're gonna get you down to Melbourne.
Absolutely, I'd love. I hadn't been down there in your country in probably 10 years, so it'd be great to jump on down there. The convention life is very, very good to me, and I love being a part of it. Mm. It's all about the fans. I mean, that is the driver of my life. You know, the money's fine, and that's fun, and Instagram is fun. I get it, but it's always about the fan. Those people that actually drive that industry. If we didn't have rabid, crazy, super knowledgeable freak shows of fans that we have in the horror genre across the board, that whole world wouldn't exist. So it's always about the fans. Fun as it is for me personally, I mean, I wish I was independently wealthy. I could just jump jet and we'll just have a big old party for a weekend, right?
Yeah.
You know, but that's not, unfortunately, my reality. Because I afford my own jet, then I definitely would do that. But by all means, we'll come down to Australia and we'll have a blast. I'm the only person that's quote unquote not working is me. And I'd love to be back in the Scream franchise. You know, I said it before, is I'd love to figure out how to have Drew come back and kill me, which would be hilarious in my mind. You know, it'd be an inside joke the whole way, and that's fine. So that'd be great bookends, right? I kill her, she kills me.
So, Lee, you probably don't know this, but Scream 2 is actually my favorite Scream movie. Like, I love the first movie, absolutely, but there's something about Scream 2 that just really struck a chord with me and just my experience, even with my friends going to see it in the cinemas and everything. It's just always been my favorite, and it's the one that I can easily put on and watch over and over again and always just enjoy it and never be bored with it. Coming back, I mean, what was one of your favorite stunts on that movie, or what was the hardest stunt, or what's one of your favorite memories from Scream 2?
So going back, I mean, Scream 2 was... it was fun to be back there. It was fun to be working with Tony again and Wes and the guys. I really enjoyed that part of it. But that whole action, so I brought in, when I came back to Scream 2, I was brought in to do all the car work and all that stuff in the middle of the film when they're in the police car.
Sorry to interrupt. Did you know that was supposed to be in a different movie?
What's that?
So that car scene in the police car where she obviously gets it, you're knocked out and she gets over you and out the door. Kevin Williamson actually wrote that for I Know What You Did Last Summer. And the director,
really?
Yeah, so that was supposed to be Sarah Michelle Gellar in that movie. And there's sort of a scene similar, like a chase scene where she's trapped in a car, but they didn't use it because the director on that film, like, nah, it's not going to work. It won't work. And then so when Wes and Kevin were putting together Scream 2, Kevin's like, I got this idea that they didn't want to do, and Wes loved it, obviously. And it's one of the best scenes in the whole entire franchise.
Yeah, it was a very intense scene. And like I said, when I watched it not too long ago, I was like, man, I forgot how great that scene was. So when I came back to do that scene in Scream 2, it was great to see Wes, great to see Tony again. And, you know, Tony and I worked together a lot, and I worked together a lot with Tony and Wes. I mean, Tony did 20 years of Wes Craven, and I probably did 10. I think my first Wes Craven film was the original Nightmare. And so I did a bunch after that, all the way through Scream 2. And then that night was very long. It was cold. It started off with me breaking my hand on the glass that didn't break.
Don't ask, don't tell.
From the effects guys. And then spun from there. Then I went and crashed the car.
Get down back there! Cool to be the son of a bitch! I'll blow your fucking head!
And then trying to get the car to do what I wanted to do, and it wouldn't cooperate because it was just, I couldn't generate the energy and the speed in the vehicle to get it to break loose at the right time. And then I crashed it into that K-rail. That hurt. And then I had Nev step on my nuts a couple of times getting out of the car. That hurt. You know, so it was just like, I was, by the time we got to shooting that sequence when Wes and her were really in sync and they were doing all the close-ups and doing the coverage and all that stuff, I was tired and sore. I wanted to Advil and a coffee. I wanted to go to bed. you know, it was 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock, and I'm just tired. You're like, just lay there and pretend you're knocked out. I'm like, not a problem. Watch this.
So, having a nap. You know,
method yeah. acting.
Yeah, it was method acting. I was definitely ready to be passed out.
So all those close-ups that we see, that's you. That's not, they don't bring the actor back in when no, she's looking why? In the eyes of the mask. It's all you.
It's all me. And that's actually, I was probably taking a nap at that point. And then the running joke is that when, remember the scene, so like she gets out of the car and then she has to go back, and then both of them actually out of the car, right? Yeah. And then she has to go back to see if Ghostface is still there, right?
Hey, take a minute, I have to. Oh, Sid. No, Sid, come back. Sid. Come back. Oh shit. What? He's gone.
The running joke is I'm not there because I was at craft service. So. That's I'm perpetuating that
yeah. Ghostface just got a bit hungry and
yeah, in fact, I probably was because, you know, they got to go back and do the covers and the reverse angles. I guarantee I was at craft service. I know I was. So, and then I got to, what was the actress that played the character on that, her sidekick in that car?
Elise Neal?
Yeah, cut her throat. And we shot in sequence that night. We shot it from the very beginning of when I break the window and kill those cops, or when I crash the car and pause out. So we shot in sequence.
Well, see, you should be able to answer the question, how does Ghostface get from the car to killing Helly so quickly?
Crash service. So they walk away. See, when they walked away, I went out the window.
Yeah.
So I went out the window. Craft service was just on the other side of camera. Hit craft service, had a quick latte, walked around the back. And then that's how that all occurred. Yeah,
that's all just edited out.
What you can't see, I actually had to put down my latte to slice her throat. So it's only take a minute. Yeah, the one question that if I ever run into Kevin again is I want to, and I think I asked you this or told you this last time, Michelle, was that somebody in one of the panels or one of the cons asked me which character was Ghostface when he killed Drew. So I'm like, I don't know. It was just me. But I want to go back to Kevin, who wrote it. I'm like, so when you're writing this first opening sequence, what killer was Ghostface?
Do you have a theory of which one you were?
No, I can't. I can't go out on a limb on that one yet.
You strangle her in that scene too, don't you?
Yeah, you needed a good choking.
Yeah, I think that if you go and analyze everything, I think it makes it Billy in that scene.
Well, so he would have to model himself out of me. So yeah. Shot in sequence. I was the first. Yeah. Yeah, I remember shooting that with Drew that night. And God, it was cold. You know, everybody, if you look at the behind the scenes footage, you know, you can see everybody's breath. Everybody's got jackets on.
Yep.
I have wardrobe on, which, you know, you guys have been in those robes. You sweat quick.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing cool about them. And Drew's just, you know, she's in there with a sweater and a pair of pants and no shoes. And I remember choking her, and she's like, well, how do you do this? I'm like, you shoot, here's a stuntman sequence. You could have as much tension and aggravation and make it look like you're absolutely choking somebody, but how it's done in reality is I'm all tense, and I'm trying to pull my hands away, and she's pulling my hands to her. So that's how that works. So I'm sitting there just choking the snot out of her. I'm pulling back. So if it ever gets out of whack, or she doesn't like it, or all she has to do is let go, and I'm clear. It's reverse dynamic tension.
Yeah.
I'm like, hold my hands closer, and then that creates that tension on her trying to get my hands off, or so it looks. And then I'm actually in reverse. I'm pulling away. She's pulling towards us. So if it ever goes awry, you know, or whatever, she needs to get out of the scene.
mentally or physically, she all she does is release, and I break clean.
Well, there's some movie magic for you there.
So the next time you watch the scene, that's how we did that.
Because I know last time we talked about the knives being like the retractable knives.
Yeah, they would telescope inside each other.
And is that the same? Scream 2 would have been the same thing?
Yeah, I think we still used them at that point. Because we were into Scream 2 within, I think, 12, 16 months. Because we shot Scream 2 in 96 is when we started shooting. And we shot it originally in 95. Scream 1 comes out, Scream 2 comes out. So yeah, it was 96 when we started that. So within the year, we started back in on the second one.
What I'm curious is about is you're obviously the original Ghostface. So how come you're not Ghostface through the entire Scream and Scream 2? Like, why do they use multiple stuntmen?
Because they didn't want to get locked into one guy playing the character. So as much as I love Kane Hodder, right? Kane got locked into that character, and he made a great living and great bunch of money playing that character for several of the films, and they did not want that to happen. And the second part of that is you could wad up a stunt guy and go get another one the same day, right? And if you're all vested in the character, let's say I was blessed to run Scream 1, 2, and 3 and play that character, right? Well, and since it's a stunt based character, all it would have taken me was, oop, I just sprained my ankle, and now they have to replace me and find somebody that's my size, runs like me, moves like me, the whole bit.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Well, I was going to say, you actually touched on it before. Like, you broke your hand. And when you said it didn't break, what was it, when you were hitting the car window that you broke your hand?
Yeah, okay. Take one. Yeah. So here we are at O Dark 30, middle of the night. And Tony goes, hey, you want these sap gloves? And sap gloves are a glove that had lead shot in them. Police used to use them back in the political when you could be a cop days. And so I'm like, no, because they were a little bit thick and fat, and I didn't like how they felt. And I'm like, no, man, I'll just hit the glass, and the plungers are going to break it, and So I wound up, and when you break safety glass in vehicles, when it goes, it goes, and there's no in between, because it's that safety glass, it has that laminate in it. But I also hit enough glass to where you got to put something behind it, you know, to make it work. So I hit that thing at about 90%. And man, my head just, and the plungers did their job, but they just didn't break the glass. So they had to put another plunger on there. My hand bounced off that thing, and it's O Dark 30. And all you hear, the whole crew, everybody goes, ooh. And man, I hit that thing and my hand bounces off. And I was in amazement for a minute. I'm like, man, that didn't break my hand. Sure. And everybody's like, ooh. And Tony's like, yeah, all right. I'm like, yep, take two. You know, got with the stunt guy. They put an extra plunger on there. The next time it worked like a charm. We just kept on going.
The life of a stuntman.
It's always the small ones that get you. Always small, easy stunts that really tear you up.
So I'm from taking what you've been saying, you enjoyed being back for Scream 2, being around the same people, but the actual experience of doing the work wasn't as enjoyable as the first one. Is that?
Well, only in the sense that I was beat up that whole entire night.
Yeah, exactly.
Racking my hand and bouncing. We hit that K rail at about 25. It doesn't translate how fast we were going in the movie. But right before I hit it, I glanced down and we were going through 25 miles an hour, which doesn't sound like much, but when you go from 25 to zero, you know, that K-rail's heavy, and it was reinforced, and it was bolted to the ground. So when we hit it, it didn't move. And so when you go, 25 miles per hour is roughly 25, that's almost, not quite, it's about 38 feet per second. So when you go 38 feet per second to zero, in other words, go run across your house and hit the wall, is basically what happens. It doesn't feel good. And, it was one of those things. And then you have, so now I'm tired and I'm beat up. I'm tired and cold, tired and hungry. And then you have Nev crawling all over. And she was crushed. She's like, Lee, I'm so sorry. I'm like, Nev, do your thing. And she did. don't worry about me. Do you. And she did. That was a great scene.
Because you were strapped in that scene, or it's just no seatbelts, no nothing?
I don't remember if the seatbelt was on me. I know we didn't have our 5 points on because we had a big harness on just to make sure I didn't bounce off the steering wheel. But I don't remember if I was seatbelted in or not. I had to actually go back and look.
Would the car have been reinforced or anything like that? Or just, we reckon this
It was just a good old cop car. And we were low speed enough to where we weren't going to wad the car up.
Yeah.
And the main thing is, if you remember, we had that mannequin
of the detective
neighborhood,
right? And he gets, you know, and my biggest thing was, I knew I was going to hit the wall and I knew I was going to stop, but trying to keep the car lined up to make that happen. Here's the cheat on that is I literally put, we lined everything up with the effects department. I said, look, I just put my tire on the curb in the gutter, right? And just run, I can't miss. And that's what we did. You see the car bounce off, it comes sliding across, and all of a sudden you see it coming down the gutter, bouncing, it's popping up and down. It's because it was trying to climb out of the gutter over the curb side. Yeah. So I just put the wheel in there and mashed the gas hard, and here we go. Pretty easy stunt, because you know the outcome.
Yeah.
The main thing was to keep the mannequin and the pipe lined up correctly.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I was actually thinking that. I was like, that seems like that would have had to be really well executed. And it's kind of, we only want to do this once.
Yeah, we only had one shot at that. And it was technical. It wasn't a difficult stunt as in aim the car straight, mash the gas, and you're going to hit a wall. That's the easy part. But trying to keep it precision enough to hit that mannequin and that pipe and make it all tie together. That, it was, you know, it was a precision stunt. It wasn't actually this big technical thing. It was just a precision stunt. It was fun, and you know, in that sense, I was just tired at the end of that sequence. Mm-hmm. Tired and sore. Comes with the deal of being a stuntman. Like
so, Scream 3 comes around. Were you asked? Were you available? What was the go
so
there?
So at that time, Tony and Wes had stopped working together, and my loyalty was with Tony.
Yeah.
And they took the franchise. At that point, the franchise was kind of going a little bit different direction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have gone back to the stunt coordinator and probably got on it, but it was a new crew and I didn't want to, I like the guys that I was working with. I'm a loyal guy. And so I didn't want to be a part of that new process. And then 4 and 5 came around. And of course, by then I'm fairly retired out and, you know, it would be fun to go back and enjoy making movies for what they're worth. Like, I miss making movies with my friends. I still have some really good friends that are still in the film industry that are still very active. They've, you know, stunt coordinating now, they're directing now, they're second unit directors now. I miss making films with them. And like the running joke is, I miss the BSing, but I don't miss the BS, right? And the film industry is a rough racket. I don't care who they are, but anybody that's in the film business will tell you it's a tough racket.
I feel like you're in 2 of the most iconic scenes in Scream and Scream 2. For your Scream legacy, you're doing pretty good.
Thanks. So, you know, yeah, it'd be fun to kind of jump back into to Scream and do something. Maybe at 7. We'll see. We'll see what 6 looks like. It'll be out here.
Scream X when we get to number 10.
Yeah. You know, maybe I'll luck out and we'll like Halloween. I just saw it the other day. Halloween's what, 43 years old now? 40 plus.
Yeah, 44 maybe.
Yeah, right? 40 years. I remember when that thing came out, which is dating me, but what a run. And here that franchise is still on.
But having said that, like, it's crazy even for me to think, you know, going to the cinema and seeing Scream 2 for the first time and going, oh my God, that's 25 years ago now. We're celebrating its 25th birthday. And, you know, that's crazy.
I've yet to see it. They've been doing a lot of screenings around the States with Scream 2 and back in the theater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I hadn't had a chance to reel one of those in because it'd be really cool to see it on the big screen again.
Unfortunately, we don't always get all that great stuff you get in the States because you've got a lot more people to justify having it. But luckily there are a couple of cinemas here in Melbourne that have actually played Scream 1 and 2 back to back. Just occasionally, just one-off nights.
I think it's on this weekend.
Yeah, I believe
Sunday
it's on
night.
This weekend.
So, see, there's the jet. I could jump on it now. We could make it.
Yeah.
And I know with one of the big theatres here that's very known for playing all the old classics, the Astor, they had a Scream or a Stabathon where they played all 5 movies, did a marathon, and I'm sure they'll do that again. And I'm pretty sure they might have played Scream 2 again recently, but they're about to. I think they're playing a sequels, or they're doing a marathon of Halloween sequels.
Yeah, tonight.
Not Halloween the franchise, but like just Evil Dead 2, Scream 2.
Evil Dead, love that one.
Army
of Darkness, love that one.
But the cool thing was the Scream 2 is not like a new 4K master, it's the original 35mm print.
That'd be so cool.
Just a side note, Scream 5, you know, is this big homage to Wes as well. And the guys involved with that, Radio Silence, they're really good at, yeah, like you said, you touched on before, like doing a lot of really Wes stuff and putting little nods to Wes through the movie. And I feel like they went out of their way to at least get a lot of people back that had been part of the original franchise. Were you ever contacted?
Nah. I'm just, like I said, you got to remember, I'm just a working stunt guy at that point in my career, right? And there's no, I'm not, even though I'm associated with the original Ghostface character, and giving birth to that through Wes and Tony Caesar, which is great. And I'm very honored to have done that. Nobody really understands. If you look at the franchise and you watch where Ghostface starts off, Scene 1, Scream 1, withdrew, right? To where it is now. The character is not the same. He doesn't move the same. He doesn't act the same. And the word that Wes described him as, when I asked Wes, I said, so tell me about this character that I'm getting ready to play. He goes, he moves like a phantom. All right. So then I went back to Phantom of the Opera, which is a classic black and white, right? Mm. And, variations of that. So I'm like, okay, Phantom's a move that I had in my brain how a Phantom moves. And that's where the motivation came. That's why that's why Ghostface moves that way. And that was lost after number 3.
I love how you say that, because I probably had never really thought about it so much in that perspective. But do notice, if you go back and watch the ones that you're in, it does feel like Ghostface is, again, very much like you said, the Phantom, but the way he moves is so smooth. Yeah, okay, there's a few chase scenes where he gets hit and gets knocked over, but that's what happens when something gets thrown at you. And I know, trust me, like yourself, I've run around in one of those costumes. It's not easy.
Oh, my gosh. There's a few cheat notes I throw in there on how to get away with that.
And some people go, oh, geez, it's not as easy to see out of just walking. I've chased people because I've done my own little Scream stuff many years ago with a little handheld camera and stuff like that. So I know how you feel, but you're right. Like, even the way we shot it or the way Patrick edited it, it does feel like this really grand, dramatic, like, moments with Ghostface and the reveals and just, or the lifting of the arms and the cape coming out is very, like I said, Phantom of the Opera, kind of these really great moments that sort of set the scene and give this, just elevate Ghostface into this thing, like this amazing cinematic thing. But then you're right, it does feel like it's not so much that anymore. Like, it's, yeah, there's maybe the kills are a little bit better and some of the stuff, the tech stuff that they can do is great, but there's never really, Ghostface is definitely like a diluted thing that it's not this huge cinematic thing anymore.
No, and I don't know, digressing back earlier in our conversation, maybe that's the, I don't know if that's lack of respect for the Ghostface character, and that's not me, I'm talking about the character of Ghostface, right? And that they've lost sight that Ghostface is its own character, or they've gone down, well, you're supposed to be playing Ghostface, so this is how that character would play this Ghostface, or this is the killer that's supposed to be, right? So I don't know, not in the director's mind, I don't know. Me personally, I just don't think they care.
Yeah,
I don't think they care that Ghostface was its own entity and was played a certain way under Wes's side. I think that whole element was lost.
And I agree with that. I think maybe, the focus has become about Dewey and Gail and Sydney, which is fair enough too, like their character evolution. And they've forgot about Ghostface because they're like, oh, it's just a guy in a suit kind of thing. And it's not, like you said, it could be reflective of the actual killers, that this Ghostface is a little bit more clumsy or not as clean. So that makes sense if that's Jill or Charlie or whatever. But yeah, it does feel like maybe they have forgotten that. They're just like, that's a guy in a suit. We don't have to worry about that. We don't have to direct that. It's just
that's
like
my personal take on it. I think you're correct on that. It was a bummer because we had a really good flow going on there for a second, right? Mm-hmm. Right before I went into technicals. That was really good.
We'll get you back again. Don't worry.
Before we sort of wrap it up, did you want to mention some groundbreaking news competition?
Nothing groundbreaking. I think what we're going to try to do, a couple of things. We're going to we're going to put the Scream 2 wardrobe together. We're going to push that out. We're going to try to get the powers to be to take that out on photo ops on the conventions coming up in the 23 season. Because we did the first one. We did Scream 1 last year. I want to do Scream 2 this year because this is the 25th anniversary for Scream 2, right? And I want to go see if they'll let me do that. And because going back to Scream Nation and the hardcore Scream fans is, a lot of them are completionists. So they want to have a picture of Scream 1. They want to have a picture of Scream 2. And if I had 3, 4, and 5, I would do that also, right? Because everybody wants to have, the hardcore collectors love that completion. I mean, Cable, you could appreciate it because look at how many masks you have, you know, and like I said, all the variations. Same mask, different month.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, easily. I don't want to count them all again because I know there's too many of them. But
exactly.
I've even got the scary movie variations as well. So
yeah, I was looking at those on eBay just now. They're pretty inexpensive, and you know, since it's all studio wall stuff, I don't mind. You know, they don't have to be perfect. So like I think my blue one has a couple of blems on it, but it's for the background. You know, otherwise, if I was the crazy Scream Nation collector, I would make sure it was pristine. I would pay top dollar for that. And then the other thing we're going to do, I put it out on Instagram, I think. And, you know, I don't know how many followers I have right now, 1,600, 1,700. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this 25th anniversary, and I'm going to sign it and then sign the tag on it also on the back. And I'm going to do that for the 2,500 giveaway.
Oh, awesome.
We'll sign that. Put that one on for 2,500, and then I'm going to take one of my, I have an extra bobblehead, so I have one of the Chrome bobblehead figures. And I think on what I'll do with that one is we'll do a tie-in, since I have original Ghostface as the sister IG account. You know, that's my backup account, because as you guys know, for some reason, somehow Instagram shuts down accounts, or for whatever reason they get shut down. So original Ghostface carries the same content. So I'm probably 300 or 400 on that. So I'll sign a couple of the ghost face bobblehead things, and we'll give away that over on that website, just to keep the, you know, just to give back to the Instagram family, so to speak, and to keep the brand growing. We'll do that. I'm gonna wrap it up and go grab some dinner, guys. Yeah. Super appreciate you. Love being on your podcast as always. And you know, we'll get this one all edited up. Can't wait to see it, because we covered a lot of ground tonight. Talked about all kinds of good stuff.
That was great having you on, Lee. Thanks for bringing in Bill for the little.
Yeah, that was fun. That was kind of a one-off fun thing. It was great. I liked how that just jumped in and out. That was fun for the podcast. Hopefully the viewers are like that.
But like I said, greatly appreciated having you on, spending some time with us. And hopefully, like you said, Jurassic Park 2, we can talk that a bit more in depth next time. We'll definitely get you back for a Scream 6 reaction.
Yes. I look forward to that one. We're going to have to, let's coordinate our timings. I know our schedules are a wreck, but we'll have to coordinate like when it breaks here. Cause as you know, everything goes different world thing. So we'll pop here first, and then we'll see what the delay is for you.
We get it first.
Yeah. We got it first for Scream 5.
So. Get out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So before you run away to get tacos. Yeah. So what happens, I know there's probably some exceptions to the rule in the States, but generally when a movie drops, you get it on a Friday. In Australia, again, unless it's a public holiday where it's like Boxing Day here is another big day that they'll release some big Christmas movies, but generally our movies drop on a Thursday here. So we'll get it on a Thursday, and sometimes they can even do preview screenings on a Wednesday, which I think they did with Scream 5 as well. So you think about that, we get it then, and then we're also 16 hours in front of you guys. So, imagine that. That's how far in advance we get it. So we're the ones that could actually spoil it.
All right. Then you guys, you guys do suck. And then you have to wait until I get to see it. So you guys get to see it first. And I can't wait to see the Instagram messages. Yeah. And then I'll make it a point to go. We'll see if Webb's around. And
We all need to see it the day it comes out, the day it's premiered, and we'll get together the day after or something like that.
All right, we'll have to do that. We should just get the big old Scream Nation together and put a whole just wrap around that. We'll sit down and do it was the best thing ever, or it was like, you know, pour some gasoline on it. So absolutely, let's do that. So what's right now, it's supposed to come out, it's supposed to drop in March, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. On that note, Lee, thanks again. Greatly appreciate to have you back on for the sequel.
And, anytime, guys. We have such a great time. You know, at least I do, yakking with you guys and having fun.
Yeah, no, we appreciate it. We'll definitely get you back again.
All right, looking forward to it. Everybody be safe down there. Summer's coming for you guys, the warm weather, so to speak.
Oh, you'd think that, but it's been pretty heavily raining for the last week.
Well, send some up here, man. I need some here in Southern California. Yeah. All right, guys, be safe. I love you. Peace.
Enjoy your tacos.
On that note. Don't forget, not all sequels suck.
Just the one that bills it.
By definition alone, they're inferior films.